Good morning. Today's Daven Sota, Lamed Beis. We have a little bit more to go in order to finish up the sixth parak of the Masechta. Sixth parak of the Masechta is a daf. So going to be one of your shorter dafim that you see here in Shas. And so we started yesterday, and we could have finished it yesterday, but we didn't. We saved off the Eidos discussion for today. So we are going to be starting off today with the conclusion of the sixth parak, a discussion of Eidos, Eidos HaMachishim. What happens when Edim contradict one another regarding Tumah. So that's going to be our first discussion today, and that will conclude the sixth parak of the Masechta. Okay. Then we begin the seventh parak, and with the seventh parak, we're effectively going to be doing a Mishnah today. We'll do a little bit of Gemara as well, but really we're going to be focusing on a Mishnah. Okay, with that stated, so let's start off with the discussion of Edim HaMachishim. Let's go over some basic information that we were introduced to here in the sixth parak. Number one, when it comes to Eidos of Asota, so there are three opportunities of Eidos, three steps of Eidos. Number one is Kinui, a warning. Number two, Stira, seclusion. And number three, Tuma, if Edom actually see the act itself, the act of adultery. And all three of those steps, so we have a machlokus in terms of how many Edom you need. Actually, in two of the three, we have a machlokus. By the third, there is no machlokus. So of the two of the three, so what is the machlokus? That's the first Mishnah of the Masechta. Going all the way back to day one of Sota, Daf Beis. So the Mishnah introduces us to a machlokus between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. Lefishitas Rabbi Eliezer. So you need to aid him for the kinui, but you don't need to aid him for the stira. For the stira, one aid would be sufficient. In fact, not only is one aid sufficient, doesn't even have to be a kosher aid. Shitas Rabbi Eliezer. And then, just if you want next level, you go through the Gemara. The Gemara brought in a brisa, which gave us an opposite view of Rabbi Eliezer, that for the kinui I don't need to aid him, but for the stira I do need to aid him. Anyway, that's the beginning of the Masechta, that's Shitas Rabbi Eliezer. And then Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua says that for kinui I need to aid him, and for stira I need to aid him. For a woman to become a sota, in which she's suspected, but at the same time she's usher to her husband, so the husband's going to be warning her in front of two Edim, and she's going to be secluding herself with said man in front of two Edim. At that point in time, now she is a sota. We don't know what happened in that room, but because now of the two steps and the Edim that accompanied the two steps of both for both Kino and Stira, so now she is, from a status standpoint, a sota. She's usher to her husband, and the only allowance now that she's going to be enabled to reunite with her husband is going to go to the Beis HaMikdash and drink the Mei Sota. So far, so good. Everything over here is just a recap. And then what happens if, after the kinui and after the stira, now what happens if somebody actually sees the Tumah itself? That is going to make her a Sota Vadai. Not a suspect, not somebody who can go to the Beis HaMikdash and drink the water, but in other words, she is now considered an adulteress. As we already pointed out a number of times, that one aid cannot put her to death. In other words, for Misa, you're going to need to aid him. But in order for her to have now the status of not a suspected adulteress, not a sota suffix, but a sota's vadai, so one aid is going to be sufficient. And according to everybody, that one aid does not have to be a kosher aid. The aid could be a woman. It could be anyone who is testifying. Right? I was asked yesterday about a child. Unsure about a child. Okay. Anyway, so that is all but just a recap and a review of, honestly, the first mission of the Masechta. Don't want to miss the opportunity. Thank the Masuth family of West Orange, New Jersey. Sponsorship of the entire Masechta learning that we do this morning will be Zecher Nishmas Nechemia ben Avraham. Now we go back to what we learned in yesterday's Mishnah, and that is that in yesterday's Mishnah, what happens if, let's say you have Eidei Tumah, but you get different reporting from Eidei Tumah. One aid says he saw that they were actually Metame. Another aid says, no, they weren't. In other words, both of them, this is unbelievably awkward, but both of these people are looking in the room, seeing what's happening, and mamish, two different conclusions of what happened over there. One said something and one said nothing. Or what if it's two saying something and one saying nothing? Or what if it's two saying nothing and one saying something? So the Mishnah goes through all those permutations of what happens if I have Edim or Machishim Zadzeh, and what do I do under those circumstances? So, with that stated, now we are perfectly set up in order to go through the Gemara. And let's start going through the Gemara. So, Edom are Nitmeis. So, we're going to do first a 1v1. Now, remember, in Edus, by the way, we're almost never going to have this discussion of 1v1. Right? In other words, by Edus, you need two. That's normal. But over here, we're talking about Sota. And as we already got done previewing and foreshadowing that by Sota, for the 8-day Tumah, one's sufficient. So for us to have a conversation of 1v1, perfectly normal, in Sota. So, eight Omer Nitmeis, and the first case of the Mishnah is, one said Tumah occurred, and the other one said Tumah did not occur. Again, it's a really awkward back and forth between these two Eidim, but that's what we have right now. So we have different reporting, and what do I do if it's 1v1? So, time of the Kamachish, like, I'm sorry, we're on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, and we are at the two dots. It's about a third of the way down. So Taima de Kamachishle, Alo Kamachishle, Eidechan Mehem and Menani Mili. So the Gemara says, so how do I know that Eidechan is Neman, that one witness is going to be believed? Tan Rabbanan. So we learned in a Brice of Eidein Va, Bishtai Makasim Adaber. So this Brice hopefully sounds familiar. We did it a month ago at the beginning of the Masechta. So we already covered this brisa. We get to review. So this brisa was already presented to us on Daf Beis. And here we are now again on Daf Lamed Aleph, going over the same brisa. And Atam Rebishayim O'enu Ela Be'echad. So when it says Ve'edein Ba, there weren't witnesses there seeing the actual Tumah. Meaning there weren't two witnesses there. I don't understand. The pasuk says aid. Aid is in the singular. So the Gemara says, you know the rule. Well, we've gone over this rule a number of times. We get to go over it again. So we are going to go over one of the most classic tools of the Yud Gimel Nida Shatara Nejeshas Behem, and that's what's called the Binyanav, a precedent. The Torah says Eid Echad in one location. Eid Echad, one witness. If you say the word Eid, then isn't the next word Echad redundant? No, it's not redundant. What it's doing is telling me that the default of Eid is two. And only when the Torah goes out of its way to say one, then and only then is it one. Otherwise, we go back and we default to two. Eid in halacha is two.
Could Eid Echad be a unique witness?
You could say that, but the Armisora...
Perfect.
But our Masorah is that when it comes to Eid Echad is the outlier. Eid is the default. The default is two. That's the Masorah of the many things that can be challenged. This is something which is absolute. That's a given. And now we plug that into the Parsha of Sota. Meaning, what happened? Kinui already happened. Stira already happened. And now the Torah describing the Tumah and Eid Ein Ba. And two people didn't see it. Oh, okay, fine. So two people didn't see it. So what does that now mean? Well, if two people didn't see it and somebody saw it, so the math over here is pretty straightforward, and that is it's not two, it can't be zero, it's one. So v'yamar achmana treylei slei elachad. Now v'hilo nispasa, now provided that she wasn't violated, in other words, as long as she was a willing participant in the act, so now asura. So that one aid at the end, after kinui and after stira, that one aid at the end is now going to create iser. Im dimidurai seid echad mehaman. Edech hechi machishle hamer ula kol makom shem in the Torah leidechad sarei kan shnayim vein varv shel echa ben makom shnayim. And now we set ourselves up for a brilliant question, and all this discussion that we're about to have from here until the end of the parak should sound familiar. Why? Because we did this discussion in Yevamos at the end of Yevamos, right? How many times in halacha are we going to be accepting the testimony of one aid? The answer is there are very few cases. Right? There is a difficult Rambam where the Rambam only counts one case. But we know, and there's ways to explain the Rambam, but we know there is at least a couple of cases in the Torah where we believe one aid. So one of the cases is ours under discussion. Post-Kinui, post-Ira, so now you have one witness who actually sees the Tumah, that one witness is going to be believed. That is one scenario where Eid Echad is going to be believed. And the other one, which we discussed extensively, is at the end of Yevamos, and that is by Eidus Isha. Husband goes away, husband does not come back, we don't know where the husband is, and now we have reporting that he died. In such a situation, one person reporting that he died is going to be believed. That would be another example of Eid Echad. The discussion that we're having right now is almost identical, I think it's word for word, as the Gemara in the end of Yevamos, towards the end of Yevamos, where there the Gemara had exactly this discussion. But we get to now discuss in the context of Sota, and we are now set up, primed for a brilliant question. So, We have now a Chiddush HaTorah, but when it comes to Sota, this is an outlier that we believe one in. Now again, by the way, you have to put it in context. In other words, it's after Kinu, it's after Stira, you have Raglaim Ladavar, but it doesn't matter. Meaning, there, you need the right context. But still, one person witnessing and reporting the Tumah, so now that person is going to be believed. Now we have a principle of Ula. The principle of Ula is that any time that the Torah accredits one as two, now I said it's funny, any time, kol makom. How many other times are there? And I know I just cited Eidus Isha as just an example, but the truth of the matter is, if you see the Gemara in Yevamos, it's pretty clear. Eidus Isha and the credibility of one witness is a din derabanan, not a din daraisa. So the language of Ula is a little bit interesting, right? Kol makom she'amina Torah eid echad. Anytime the Torah believes one witness, right? What would be the other example? Okay, I'm going to leave that question open-ended. But meanwhile, let's go over the question. So now when the Torah extends credibility to one witness, so that one witness halachically will be treated like two. Now, here we go. I have a 1v1. One said he saw the Tumah. The other one said he did not see the Tumah. No. And now we have the rule of Ula. The rule of Ula is that when the Torah accredits one witness by Ede Tumah Vesota, treated like two. So really, the 1v1 halachically, when you put on your halachic lenses, is not 1v1. What is it? It's 2v1. Oh. And what do we say when it's 2v1? So when it's 2v1, obviously the 2 is going to knock out the 1. Okay. So in the Mishnah says what happens with 1v1. Well, we read the Mishnah yesterday. The Mishnah tells us offsetting. In other words, they knock each other out. We're back to now Kinu and Stira. And now she's going to be drinking. She's going to go to the basement. She's going to drink. The Gemara says, I don't get it. We have over here a situation of not 1v1, but halachically 2v1. And therefore, the 2 should knock out the 1. Meaning, the 1 which we treat like 2 should knock out the 1. So it is a brilliant question. The Gemara answers. So I said, El Amar Ula. So Tini lo isa shosa v'chein amar yitzhak lo isa shosa. So two Amoraim come along and basically say, look, the question is too good, right? It's a fantastic question. In fact, it's so good. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take our pens. We're going to go back to the Mishnah. We're going to edit the Mishnah. And the Mishnah, instead of saying, Haisa Shosa, we're going to rewrite the Mishnah, Lo Haisa Shosa. She wouldn't drink. Why? Because there's no point in drinking. Because the one who said that there were Tuma occurred is going to be treated like two. The one who said no Tuma occurred, that's one. That's 2v1. The 2 knocks out the 1. We're now at the point where Halacha assumes that she did in fact commit adultery with that man. Therefore, there's no point in drinking. The Mishnah, therefore, should be reading Lo Haisa Shosa. Now, it goes without saying that to edit the Mishnah and to rewrite the Mishnah, especially such a dramatic change from Haisa Shosa to Lo Haisa Shosa, that's a move. But at the same time, however, the question is really strong. So sometimes when you have such a strong question, so you take such drastic steps, that is approach number one. The Gemara gives the second approach, and that's the approach of Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya Amar Haisa Shosa. Leave the Girsa of the Mishnah alone. So Rabbi Chiya Kashi Du'ula. The Gemara says, okay, so fine. So you're going to leave the Girsa alone. But now you're stuck with the question. The question still, the question is begging. I have now 1v1, but if the Torah treats that first one, who attests to the Tumah, if the Torah treats that like 2, so 1v1 is equivalent to 2v1. And now the 2 should knock out the 1. And if you're not ready to change the Mishnah, so then I don't understand. We're going to go to the base of Mishnah and drink. I don't know why you would do that. It's 2v1. So the Gemara says, Lo Kasha. Kam bevach achas, kam bezecher zeh. So the Gemara gives a really interesting way of defending Rabbi Chiya, of not adjusting the Mishnah, not editing the Mishnah. It depends on whether or not they're coming at the same time or they're coming zacher zeh. The way Rashi presents the Gemara's answer over here, it sounds like this. When it is, I'm doing it outside, I'm not going to do it inside, but Bas Achas is that when the reporting is coming, Toch de Dibur, one or the other. So halachically, as long as you're doing it within a span of Shal Malachi Rebbe Omari, so halacha views it now as it's all coming at the same time. So if it's all coming at the same time, 1v1 is treated like 1v1. If, however, there's a significant pause between one versus the other one, so now that is zecher zeh, meaning a significant pause would seemingly be more than Tolkien de Dibor, obviously, so then it's going to be treated like 2v1. And the way Rashi presents it, it's like this. when I have them coming simultaneously, and again, simultaneously just simply means betok de dibur. So when I have them coming simultaneously, so then we can't look at the one any more than one. One cannot exceed one. In other words, the halachic mechanism of one to be accepted like two is only when the one is coming by himself, independent of any conflicting testimony. Then and only then can the one be viewed as two. But if the one is coming concurrently with another one, under those circumstances, what do we say? We say that's it. We look at it just simply as a 1v1. Obviously, it gets to knock each other out, and now we're back to square one, which is, there was kinu, there was stira, we're going to go to the base of mitzvahs, we're going to drink. On the other hand, if we accepted the first one by himself, now what? So now, based in accepts that one testimony, halacha expands that one to becoming two. The rule of ula, kol makum shemina, eid echad, it's kishnayim. And now that one is serving as two. And then if later, subsequently, another one comes, no. That one that comes afterwards is just, it's just one against halachically what is two. That is the Gemara's distinction. And now you can keep the Mishnah as it is. And the Mishnah obviously would be talking about a case of bas achas, not zachar zeh. That is a fancy answer of the Gemara. It obviously needs much more discussion, but I presented it kipshuto according to Rashi. Tonight we continue now in the Gemara War in Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, and we are towards the bottom of the Amud, the last quarter of the Amud. First words in the line. Eid Amar Nitmeis Hashem, Amim Lo Nitmeis Aisa Shosa, Hachad V'chal Lo Aisa Shosa, Tiyufta De Rebbe Chia. Let's look at the next case of the Mishnah. Remember the Mishnah had three cases. 1v1, 2v1, 1v2. Right? And now the Gemara says, I'm now moving on to the next case of the Mishnah. So one says Tamei and two say not Tamei. So the Mishnah says, okay, here's what's going to happen. She's going to go drink, okay, because the two is going to knock out the one. And the Gemara basically is thinking like this. This is the thought process of the Gemara, as Rashi understands it. That case of 2v1, it's so obvious. Now, I say it's so obvious, by the way. None of this is so obvious. But but the Gemara's thought process right now is, it's so obvious. Like, in other words, the Mishnah's not giving us the example of 2v1 because the Mishnah wants to focus on 2v1. What else are we going to say by 2v1? What the Mishnah is interested in us in hearing is not just the 2v1, but the diuk, the inference that's created by 2v1. So 2v1, what do? We just go and drink. She drinks. Again, because in 2v1, where one says tum occur and two say did not occur, so again, what are we going to do? Of course. In other words, we're just going to go back to the drawing board. Right? One says tum occurred, and even if you're going to tell me the halacha is he's true like two, yeah, but two are telling you nothing happened. Okay, fine. So in other words, back to the drawing board, offsetting witnesses, we go back to Kinu and Stira, she's going to go drink. That's the Mishnah. And the Gemara's assumption is, look at the Diuk, meaning in 2v1, she's going to go drink. In 1v1, lo haisa shosa. Again, the Mishnah doesn't say that, but that's the clear Diuk. Now, if that's true, tiyufta de Rebbe Chia, now that's going to be difficult for Rebbe Chia. So amlecha Rebbe Chia, v'latameh a seifa. So Rebbe Chia says, okay, you're bothered because that case is so simple. You know, the Mishnah brings in another case, the last case of the Mishnah. Two say Tumah happened, one say Tumah did not happen. That's 2v1 in the direction of two are testifying to Tumah. One is saying nothing happened. What are you going to do in a 2v1? Obviously, we assume that Tumah occurred. Obviously, she's not going to drink. And Rabbi Chia's counter-argument is, you think the previous case is obvious? This case is even more obvious. Meaning, and if the Mishnah is outlining to what is now two obvious cases, something's going on over here in the Mishnah. Meaning, Rabbi Chia is basically arguing, you and I are missing something in the Mishnah. So, Ela Kula Bipsula Eidah. So there must be something that the Mishnah is driving at, which we're missing. And the Gemara says, here's what we're missing. What we're missing is the following, and that is that the Mishnah is there not for the Diuk, but for what the Mishnah is actually saying. You don't have to go past the surface level of the Mishnah. Stay on task with what the cases of the Mishnah are. The Mishnah is going over a case of 1v2, and the Mishnah is also going a case of 2v1. And you're saying, what's the chiddush of the Mishnah? Isn't that obvious? The cases of the Mishnah of 2v1 and 1v2 are cases where the people that are testifying are not men. They're women. They're avadim. Now, under normal circumstances, again, what a silly conversation. right? In other words, women can't testify, avadim can't testify. Like, what are we talking about? That's true under normal circumstances, but this is tumas isha. And tumas isha, which allows for one witness, also allows for women to testify and avadim to testify. And now we're going to go over some really unique rules. And that is that how do we view two women testifying, three women testifying? What happens if it's two women against one woman testifying? You see, let's just contrast it what is normally the case. Normally what goes on is that when I have a set of witnesses, a kosher witnesses, in normal testimony. So let's say it's 2v3. That's a kat versus a kat. Okay? In other words, as far as halacha is concerned, they're on equal footing. Let's say it's 2v100. But same thing. It's a kat versus a kat. All right, but that has 100 witnesses, and this one only has two. As far as halacha is concerned, they're equal. Ah. Okay, so normally when we're talking about a kat edim, a set of witnesses, once it's a set, numbers no longer matter. If they have equal footing in terms of halacha vis-a-vis their testimony. Ah, good. That's normal. Now by psule edus, so the rules are going to change slightly. And what we're going to look together right now is the slight rule changes that occur when the witnesses that are testifying are psulim. Now again, how many times are we going to have this conversation? Seldom. We'll have it here in Sota by Eid Echad of your Eid Tuma, and we'll have it in Yevamos by Eid Echad of Eid Asisha. Perfect. That's when we'll have these conversations here and in Yevamos. Where else are we going to have this conversation? Nowhere else. Okay, good. So twice in Shas, today being one of those 2 days, so twice in Shas, we're going to have this discussion. So Ela Kula Bepsula Eidus Rebbe Nechemi Eiditan Rebbe Nechemi Amar Kamakam Shemi Netorah Eid Echad Halacha Acharov Deos V'asu Shtei Nashim B'Shechad Kishnei Nashim B'Shechad. Ah. And Rebbe Nechemi says, and let me introduce you now to the rule change. And that is that when it comes to this kind of Eidus, meaning where the Torah allows for the testimony of one Eid, and the one Eid does not have to be a man, it could be a woman, so it could be an Eved. So now basically numbers matter. Okay? In other words, when I have, let's say, two women saying the X occurred, and I have one woman saying that X occurred, we'll see. It's not gonna, it'll all be the same. So what Rabbi Nechemiah is telling us is that at that point in time, the two is going to outnumber the one. Okay? In other words, even though the one by itself would have been believed, but two is greater than one when it comes to psule edus. Rule change when it comes to this kind of testimony.
A function of the edim or a function of the type of testimony?
Kosher edim. Perfect. So David's asking, good. So David's asking now, what if the edim under discussion, under review, are kosher edim? Is it going to change? And what I'm about to tell him is, depends which version of the Gemara you're going to go with. There are going to be two versions of this discussion. So we just finished up version number one. In version number one, there does not seem to be a difference in terms of who the two is and who the one is. If the two are two women and the one is one man, numbers. Numbers are going to dictate now that we're going to believe the two over the one. And that's what the Mishnah wants to tell us. Now, granted, by the way, that the Mishnah left out really the punchline, meaning that the Mishnah says, 2v1, here's the story. Wait one second. It is 2v1, but it's two women. It's one woman. Alternatively, it's two women. It's one man. In other words, that detail, which is not an unimportant detail, was left out of the Mishnah. But still, okay, that's obviously a important factor, a necessary factor in terms of understanding and appreciating the Mishnah. Good.
Why
should it make a difference? We are no longer working with the regular rules of Eidus. We are now saying that when in a case of 2v1 by Eidei Tuma, two is going to outnumber the one, even though the one by itself would have been believed. Normally, in the rules of Eidus, if you are believed by yourself, so then you carry as much weight as the other party of Eidim, regardless of numbers.
I meant the two being women.
That's already an amazing fact. The fact that we're going to be accepting the testimony of women over here, and the fact that two women now is going to be greater than one man, that's exciting. That's exciting halacha. So now, Ika d'amre, kol hechad yisei d'echad kasher mi'ikara, afilo me'ad nashim namike d'echad damyan. Now, here's version number two. Now, in version number two, David, this is where version number two is going to be different than version number one. Let's say the 1 8 is a man. So in other words, it's Eide Sota, we accept the testimony of one, and it can be a man, it can be a woman, it doesn't have to be a man, but what if it's a man? So in version number two, one man, so then one man is going to be equivalent to as many women that are going to be on the competing side. Meaning as many women are going to be on the competing side. Look, a woman's going to be believed. Two women are going to be believed. 100 women are going to be believed. But if they're offsetting, if I have one man against one woman, one man against two women, one man against 100 women, they're going to offset one another. So that's going to be like one. V'hacha. Now, if that's true, now what about our Mishnah? Because our Mishnah says 2v1, strength in numbers, right? Regardless of which way we're going. And as far as our Mishnah is concerned, our Mishnah is where everyone testifying is a woman. So if everyone testifying is a woman, so then two women is going to exceed one woman, right? In either direction. And in fact, the Gemara is going to make exactly that. And the Gemara just simply wants to first formulate the rule, but we already said it. So for me to translate the Gemara is just simply a reformulation of what we just said in version number two. And then finally, why does the Mishnah give us two examples of 2v1? Meaning the Mishnah goes, two saw Tuma, one did not see. Two did not see Tuma, one did see. Why did the Mishnah do it in both directions? You can forecast the answer. The Gemara says it. Ma'u detema ki azlina basa rov deos lechumra. Ava lekula lo azlinan kamash malan. We're going in both directions because the Mishnah just wants to simply say that, look, this is really strange. This is a unique area of halacha where I have two sets of witnesses. And meanwhile, we're going to look at the numbers. And if I have two women saying, reporting one thing and one woman reporting another, we're going to go over the two versus the one in either direction, even though it might come out as a kula versus a chumra. In other words, kula, Phil, you read my mind. Not fair. So, correct. So in other words, so which one's a kula and which one's a chumra? Is drinking a kula? Is drinking a chumra? So the, so Rashi, right? Okay. Look, I'll just say it like Rashi. But I can, if you want to argue, I'm ready for it. Not right now. I'd like to finish it off. But in other words, but Rashi says the kula is that she doesn't drink. That would be a kula. Okay. I was also thinking that you can argue in the other direction as well, that drinking may be a kula because if she's innocent and she really feels she's innocent, so then she's going to be reunited with her husband, she'll have a child. I'm also deliberating which way is the kula, which way is the chumra, but whichever way you're going to figure out is the kula, and whichever way is going to figure out the chumra, the reason why the Mishnah wants to give us two examples is simply so that we can go in either direction.
Why is drinking a stringency and not drinking a leniency?
So not drinking would be a leniency because we don't have to go to the base of Mikdash and she doesn't have to be scared out of her mind. Okay. Speaking of which, Baruch Atah Mechalem Shekhan Bebaro. Okay, so wrapping up, what is a difficult sugya? And I'm happy to report, it's not the first time I've gone through the sugya. We did in Yevamos, we did it here again. The more times you see it, just the clearer it's going to be. Hopefully, I really think I was clear today. Hopefully, you'll have a really clear view of this of the 1v1, 2v1. The rule of Ula, that when we believe one as if they're two, in this area of halacha, and the rule of Reb Nechemiah, that in the 2v1s and 1v2s, so we're going to go with numbers and not with the regular rules of offsetting Eidos. And then there are two versions of Reb Nechemiah, as the Gemara just reported. In version number one, irrespective of who the one is, two is going to be greater than one, even if that one's a man. That's an amazing halacha. But that is version number one. Version number two, modified. In 2v1, two is greater than one, but only if everybody's a woman. However, if the 2v1, if it's two women versus one man, so now it's going to be offsetting. Okay, Ad Kan, that takes us to the end of what really is a challenging sugya, and now we begin. We're going to begin this morning with the seventh parak of the Masechta, and now welcome to Sota. Meaning that we have now basically covered Sota, the topic of the suspected adulteress. Okay, now we've been here for a month. We have gone on tangents, admittedly. We have not stayed totally on point for the last month regarding Sota. But now, from this point going forward, we are going to enter into a world of tangent. In other words, we are going to be mentioning Sota just about one more time, and then we're going to go off-road. Okay, the Mishnayos over here are going to take us from topic to topic. Why would the Mishnah do that? And you will see why. Okay, Elu Nemrim B'chol Lashon. Now, these can be said in any language. Parsha Sota, number one, the Parsha of Sota. As the Kohen is now talking to her and warning her, here's what's going to happen if you did commit adultery. Here's what's going to happen if you didn't come and commit adultery. And just go through the psukim. It has to be, it can be said, sorry. Let me redact. It can be said in any language. Okay. As far as sourcing of this, we're going to see all the sourcing in the Mishnah in the upcoming Gemara. Parsha Sota can be said in any language. A woman is coming to the Beis HaMikdash. She doesn't speak Hebrew. He will talk to her in a language she understands so that she understands exactly what's going to happen. This particular halacha, our starting point of this parak, is rather intuitive. Meaning, let's prepare the woman for her. She's about to drink, and she needs to know, right? She needs to know what's going to happen if she drinks. Obviously, she must understand. And if Hebrew is not a principal language, a primary language, and she doesn't speak the language, it's almost, you know, you would have concluded this without a Mishnah. Of course you have to speak to her in a language she understands so that she understands the ramifications of what's going to happen now as she drinks. Okay, that's number one. Number two, Vidu and Maiser. At the end of the third and sixth year of the Shemitah cycle, so what you have to do is you have to do an audit, an accounting. Okay, in other words, we file our taxes annually in this country. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash for Trumas and Maisos, so accounting occurs twice every 7 years. End of the third year, end of the sixth year. Okay, and the reason why is because the Shemitah cycle operates in a 2-3 year cycles. I'm not going to go through the cycles right now, but this accounting, this auditing is done finally with a come clean. And that is vidui meiser, a confession of the fact that you have taken off all your trumas and meisros. Okay, the nusach of the vidui meiser you're going to be finding in Parshas Kisavo. Biartis akosh min abayis, v'chule. And vidui meiser can be said in any language. Kriya Shema can be said in any language. Okay, there is an extensive discussion. Okay, a really extensive discussion in terms of whether or not it's ideal or not ideal. All right, if you are not a Hebrew speaker and you understand your native tongue, right here in America, let's call it English. So, and you understand English and you don't understand Hebrew, is there any preference whatsoever to saying the Shema in Hebrew? The answer halacha is yes, but I bypassed a lot of discussion regarding what is the ideal in terms of saying Shema if you don't understand Hebrew. Okay, anyway. And Tefillah, the same thing is going to be true with Shemoneh Esrei as well, meaning if you don't speak Hebrew and you want to say it in a language you understand, you are allowed to say it in any language, of course, provided that you understand that language. Once again, what is the ideal? Again, I raise the question knowing that's a loaded question, which with a long discussion to be followed. Birchas Hamazon, benching. So benching also can be said in any language, as Shvuas Ha'edus. Shvuas Ha'edus is the Shvuah that's made when a witness comes and is subpoenaed to give testimony, and he declines, and he says, no, I have no testimony to give. And it happens to be that the litigant knows absolutely for certain that this guy was there, and he saw, and he for sure could testify, and they have him come, and they subpoena him and say, please swear now in court that you don't have testimony, and he does. So if in the event where his conscience gets the best of him, because the truth of the matter is he really did have testimony and he just didn't want to come to court and he didn't want to testify. So under those circumstances, there is a carbon to be brought. So the shvua that is going to be adjured when he comes to the Beis HaMikdash, sorry, not Beis HaMikdash, when he comes to the Beis and is adjured and he swears, so the back and forth does not have to be done in Lashon HaKodesh, it can be done in any language. And if he swears, he's now, if he lied under oath, he is now on the hook to bring a carbon. It's one of the carbon olav yoreds. Shvuos ha'pikadon, the same thing is going to be true regarding Shvuos ha'pikadon as well. In other words, you were asked to watch something. You were a shomer, and then after the shmira comes and goes, something happened to that. You're not in a position where you can return the item. However, what you like to do is swear that you are not liable based on whatever the level of your shmira is. And whatever creates a patur, whatever creates an exemption. And you swore, but you swore falsely. If later you determine that you swore falsely, so once again, a carbon is to be brought. And once again, the shvuah can be done b'chol lashon in any language. Good, so the Mishnah first gives us a short list of 7 items that can be said in any language. Now the Mishnah goes, ve'elu ne'amarim b'lashon HaKodesh. Now, for reasons which we're going to articulate, these can be said only in Lashon HaKodesh, and that is Mikra, Bikurim, when you go to the base of Mikdash with your Bikurim, so there's a Kriya. There's a passage in the Torah that you need to say. We're all familiar with it, aside from the fact that we need to be fluent with our Chumash, but we know it because it's the beginning of, it's the end of Magid, at the end of Magid, so the Psukim, right, Arami Ovid Avi, that's all Mikra Bikurim. So the and we darshan it at the Seder. We read the Medrash that accompanies it. Anyway, when you bring your Bikurim, we have not done so in more than two millennia. But when you bring your Bikurim to the Beis Hamikdash, there's a Kriya. That Kriya has to be done by Lashon HaKodesh. V'chalitza, Chalitza also must be done in Lashon HaKodesh. And Brachos and Klalos. And the Brachos and Klalos by Har Grizim and Har Eval. And we are going to be getting here in this Perek more detail about the Brachos and Klalos by Har Grizim and Har Eval than you ever would have thought. So that also has to be done by Lashon HaKodesh. It's very, very interesting, by the way, because seemingly that was a one-time event. And meanwhile, we're going to be spending a lot of time with that. Birchas Kohanim, when you have Duchening, so that has to be done by Lashon HaKodesh. There are three psukim that the Kohanim say as a bracha to the Jewish people. It's done daily. One of the mysteries of Ashkenazic Jewry, and that is that we did away with it. Okay? We did away with daily Birchas Kohanim. Okay, it is a mystery, right? There are suggestions, theories, theses in terms of why it is that we went away with it. There is a more than fascinating Ramah. You'll forgive me, I'm not going to go over it right now, in terms of why it is that that Duchening disappeared amongst the Ashkenazim. The Vilna Gaon tried his best over the course of his lifetime to resurrect daily Duchening. He felt that it was absolutely inappropriate, Minag Ashkenaz, that we just simply did away with it. And the Gaon was successful, partially. Right, so as far as the Ashkenazi community is concerned, they stuck with their minhag of not doing duchening daily. But the students of the Vilna Gaon were one of the first olim to Eretz Yisrael, and that's why. Right, I mentioned this before, but it helps us understand. You go to Eretz Yisrael, and everybody's duchening on a daily basis. What's happening? The Sfarim, the Ashkenazi, everyone's duchening. What's happening is that the Gaon's influence, although he didn't influence Ashkenaz in Europe. But he did influence enough Ashkenazim so that the minhag in Eretz Yisrael is duchening daily. So Birchas Kohanim has to be done by Lashon HaKodesh. Birchas Kohen Gadol, the bracha of the Kohen Gadol we're talking about on Yom Kippur, has to be done by Lashon HaKodesh. Parshas HaMelech, Parshas Egla Arufa. So the parsha of the Melech and Egla Arufa. So the parsha of the Melech. So that's going to be explained a little bit later on. We'll come back to what exactly that is. The Egla Arufa of the basin coming along and saying that we are responsible, so that has to be done by Lashon HaKodesh. Meshuch Mechanma B'sha Shemedaber El Ha'am. Also, when the chaplain, right, the chief Kohen chaplain of the army goes and speaks to them, right, in Parsha Shoftim, you will see the speech that is prepared for him, and that what he's going to tell them, anyone who's afraid, now's the time to go around, turn around, and go home. So that has to be said by Lashon HaKodesh.
For Chalitza, who has the speaking part?
She says, Lo me'en yavami, right? My yavam doesn't want me. Okay, so she has to speak. So mikra bikurim keitzad ve'anisav amartel fnei Hashem Elokecha. So we're now going to go through bikurim. It's interesting. In other words, notice the Mishnah. First of all, notice that we're going to be doing all the Mishnahs now. Okay, that you can notice. That's easy to notice. But also notice that by bikurim, where did we start in the Mishnah? So we're starting by the ones that have to be said by Lashon HaKodesh. Meaning it's almost like the Mishnah is telling us, like, really default is that you can say it in any language. But if you're limited to only saying in Lashon HaKodesh, there must be a reason why. Right? That seems to be the general trend of the Mishnah. That the default is you can say it in any language, and when we have a special pasuk that tells us that it must be Lashon Kodesh, then and only then it must be Lashon Kodesh. So Bikurim Ketz of Anisa v'Amartel Fnei Hashem Elokecha Olalon Omer Vanu Alevim V'Amru Malalim Lashon Kodesh Avkam Lashon Kodesh. So let's just say simply it's Gzeirah Shavah. It's Gzeirah Shavah from the Brachos and Klalos, the Har Grizim and Har Eval. Just like there can only be done by Lashon Kodesh, so to here by Bikurim where we have Gzeirah Shavah, it could also be done Lashon Kodesh. Okay, you have to wonder, in other words, let's finish a sentence. How do I know that the brachos and klalos of Har Grizim and Har Eval can only be said in Lashon HaKodesh? Put a bookmark on that question. We're coming back to that later. Chalitza case of Anta v'amra ulalon omer v'anu alivim v'amru malalam b'Lashon HaKodesh avkan b'Lashon HaKodesh. So as far as chalitza is concerned, same. Gzeirah Shavah. In other words, we have the word shared both here by Chalitza and in the brachas and klaus ha'agrizim and ha'areval, gzereshava. Rabbi Yehuda amr vantava amra kacha, ashatamar b'lashan azer. Rabbi Yehuda, same conclusion, different avenue. And that is, I don't need a gzereshava. I'm looking at the psukim by Chalitza. Right? Vantava amra kacha. Now, over here, like this. Now, if you look at the pasuk carefully and you see the context of the pasuk, so the pasuk with the kacha is really not going on the va'amra. It's not modifying va'amra. It's modifying the next part of the phrase, right? Kacha ye'aseh le'ish, right? This is what's going to happen to a man. But Joshua, in other words, Rav Yehuda believes that the kacha can also be used to modify the previous phrase, which is va'amra kacha. Say it like this, meaning in lashon hakodesh. So now, the Mishnah is going to launch into unbelievable detail of the Klaus and Brachos by Har Grizim and Har Eval. The Torah obviously gives us a description, but the Mishnah over here gives us even more. First of all, geographically, where is it? It's in the Shomron. It's next to Shechem. It's next to Elonei Moreh, Shenemar. So in other words, Elon Mareh, the one that's proximate to Shechem. Okay, it could be, I'm guessing, I don't know this, please, just I put out the proper disclaimers, right? Maybe there are multiple Elon Morehs, and that's why the Gemara over here is pointing, geographically pointing to the one next to Shechem. But I'm saying that as a guess. I do not know. Shisha shvatim al rosh hargrizim, v'shisha shvatim al rosh hareval, v'akornim v'alivim v'aron omdim lamata be'emtsa. So, six tribes on one mountain, six tribes on the other mountain, kohanim and levim in the middle. We're going to ask the question, if the six tribes include the shevet of Levi, so how can the levim occupy one mountain and also be in the middle as well? Hopefully that question bothers you. We're coming back to that. HaKohanim Akifan Es Aaron VaLevim Es HaKohanim. V'chol Yisrael Mikan V'Kan. The Aaron is in the center. Kohanim surrounding the Aaron. The Levim surrounding the Kohanim. And now the Jews are flanking, right? Six tribes on one mountain, six on the other. Mikan. Shenemer V'chol Yisrael V'Zikeno V'Shotcho V'Shoftav Omdim Mizel Mizel Aaron. Hafchu Penem Kapei Har Grizim U'Pizchu Be'Bracha. Now, the first thing the Kohanim are going to be doing is the directing. Facing and directing Har Grizim, and they're going to say a bracha. Now, here's already where we don't get this in the Chumash. In the Chumash, by the brachas of Har Grizim and Har Eval, we only hear the klala. The psukim only go over the klala. And now what the Mishnah is informing us is, yeah, that's only half the story. For every klala, there's going to be a complementary bracha. It's really simple, by the way. Just take the negative and put it into a positive. And just simply now, the bracha is going to be directed to Har Grizim. And Baruch Eish Asher Lo Yaseh Peso Masecha Ve'Elo Ve'Elo Onim Amen. Everybody answers Amen. Havchu Penem Kape Harei Val Pascha Beklala. Arish Asher Yaseh Peso Masecha Ve'Elo Ve'Elo Onim Amen. Good. And now we're just simply going to be doing this in both directions. Har Grizim Bracha Harei Val Klala, and everybody answers Amen. Ashikomim Brachas Ve'Klos Ve'Acher Kach Hevios Avanim Uvanu Es Hamizbech Ve'Sadu Besid Ve'Kasru Alav Es Kol Divrei HaTorah. So what they would do now is they would write out the Torah in 70 languages. We have an ancient Mesorah that the world spoke 70 languages. All right. I'm sure now, right, the number of languages in this world, whoop. I wouldn't even stab at a guess. But we have a Mesorah that it could be divided into 70 languages. It was 70 languages, right? The world population is always viewed as a 70 language speaking population. And so therefore the Torah is written in every one of those languages. And v'na'lu'as avanim, and what they would do is they would take the stones, v'lanu b'mkomam, and afterwards they would do what's called lina. Lina, generally speaking, after you bring a carbon in the base of Mikdash, you would stay overnight. So over there, after the brachas and klalos, so they would stay in Gilgal, meaning that's where the brachas and klalos were done. So they did lina. Again, every one of these details that we just mentioned here in the Mishnah is going to be discussed in greater depth as we go through the Gemara. But this is going to be our pausing point. Okay, today we covered the entirety of the Mishnah, and when we resume tomorrow, we're going to just run right through the Gemara. Okay, tomorrow's daf we'll be able to catch up. Not the day thereafter. But tomorrow we'll be able to. Good. Okay, so let's recap. Our first topic for today was a difficult topic, but hopefully I really gave clarity to the topic. That's my tefillah. And that is that we did Edim HaMachishim specifically in the Parsha of Sota, where we believed one witness, and it doesn't have to be a man, it could be a woman. And what happens when they're contradictory testimonies, 1v1, 1v2, 2v1? The Mishnah goes over the cases, but what does the Mishnah mean? So the Gemara discussed extensively the rule of Ula, that when the Torah gives credibility to one, that one is expanded and treated halakhically as if it's two. And then the easy question to ask, and that if that's true, so what do we do on a 1v1? Where the one who says that he saw or she saw Tumah is treated like two, so 1v1 effectively becomes 2v1. And what do we do over there? And how do we understand the Mishnah? So the Gemara gives us approaches in terms of how to understand the Mishnah. The Gemara's first distinction of Vas Achas versus Zeh or Zeh, and I give a Rashi understanding of why that should be different. And then what do we do with the next cases of the Mishnah, 2v1, 1v2? And we have the rule of Reb Nechemya, and we have two versions of the rule of Reb Nechemya, that unlike when I have Kite Edim, sets of witnesses conflicting one another, it's just basically, it's a stalemate, they offset each other, but when it comes to Edei Tumah Vesota, we look at numbers. What do we say? One versus two? Two is greater than one. Even though we believe the one by themselves, but two is greater than one. Now, is that true if that one were a man? So according to version number one, still would be true. According to version number two, nah. It's only when it's two women versus one woman, then and only then do we say two is greater than one. But if it's two women versus one man, then it's offsetting, and then it's a stalemate. And that ends the sixth parak of the Masechta. And then this morning, we began parak number seven. In parak Shvi, in the seventh parak, what did we learn together? Certain things have to be said, B'Lashon HaKosh, and seven things can be said, B'Chol Lashon. We went over the seven that can be said, B'Chol Lashon, that's the opening of the seventh parak. And then we went through a list that can only be said, B'Lashon HaKodesh. For only some of them, the Mishnah said, and how do I know? The Mishnah left out a whole bunch in terms of, how do I know? And then the Mishnah got fixated on the brachas and klaus of Har Grizim and Har Eval, and the Mishnah gave us details regarding exactly what happened. How did it look?